If you'll turn with me to the book of Esther, and we are going to start into a new series. Although we could have stayed in the framework of the series that we had titled Love at War, How to Handle Conflict in Our Hearts, that was my original intention. I felt just compelled to make a bit of a switch in the main theme. Because as you and I move into this next section of God's story, you and I are going to watch individuals engage in some very hard things in their everyday lives. And the reality is that you and I, even today, still need to find that empowerment from God to do the hard things He calls us all into. And so that's why we're kind of flipping into this idea of empowered to do hard things. And I pray our hearts would be challenged over the next 4 weeks as we watch God calling people into some very hard situations and some very hard scenarios. Now, if you're there in Esther chapter 4, again, because of the framework in which we are looking at the greater theme for our year, his story, how the faith that God has written can help us to have the faith that God is still writing in our story. We're just, again, jumping right into the middle of Esther's story. And so I would encourage you, if you have no idea about who Esther is, we're going to talk about it just a tiny little bit this morning. And what her story is all about, I'd encourage you to read the book of Esther in whole. But for this morning and for the sake of time we have today, we are going to look at Esther chapter 4. And we are going to look at it through this lens. For such a time as this. You'll see this statement made by Mordecai, her uncle, as he speaks to her. All right? Hopefully you've been able to find your place there, Esther chapter 4. If not, you can follow along on the screen, and we read these words. When Mordecai perceived that all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry and came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting and weeping and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes. So Esther's maids and her chamberlains came and told it her. Then was the queen exceedingly grieved, and she sent raiment to clothe Mordecai, and to take away his sackcloth from him, but he received it not. Then called Esther for Hatak, one of the king's chamberlains, whom he had appointed to attend upon her, and gave him a commandment to Mordecai to know what it was and why it was. So Hatak went forth to Mordecai onto the street of the city, which was before the king's gate. And Mordecai told him of all that had happened unto him, and of the sum of the money that Haman had promised to pay the king's treasuries for the Jews to destroy them. And he gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given at Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther, and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and make requests before him for her people. And Hatak came and told Esther the words of Mordecai. Again Esther spake unto Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. And the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court, who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come unto the king these 30 days. And they told to Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer, Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. Again, I have begged the Lord to allow some of my personality and passion to not just bubble over into such an intensity that we would miss the message of what the book of Esther gives to us, and specifically here in chapter 4. Now, as we come to the book of Esther, we have actually made two historical transitions from where we were last week. If you remember, Judah had sinned to such an extent that God said he would judge the children of Israel. And that was when we saw Babylon, through the leadership of Nebuchadnezzar, take the remaining Jews from the tribes of Judah and Benjamin into captivity. And that started this 70 years of captivity that they would find themselves outside of the land of Israel that God had given to them. And so, as you and I are reading the book of Esther, we are reminded that the way it is placed together for us in our English Bible is more for context than timeline. And so I would encourage you, it's always good at least one time in your life to either buy a chronological Bible or get a printout of the timeline in which the Bible really flows, and then read it that way. I say it for this reason. And I sort of flipped to come to Esther because I think what we're going through today, these days, last few days, fits so well with Esther that you will find when we come to Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they actually are before Esther in the timeline of God's story. So I just wanted to give that to you because what we recognize is there has actually now been a transition of world powers in God's timeline. In Esther's day, Persia is now the ruling nation, and the king is actually the king of Persia, no longer of Babylon. And so, although we are drawing a line in God's story, we're really kind of taking a crook backwards as we come to Esther chronologically. But I only wanted to keep the story of Mordecai and Esther, or put the story of Mordecai and Esther first, because it really fits with a thought that is important for us to think through. With the ideas that are or have been spoken about over the last couple weeks. So as you read through the book of Esther, they are now outside the 70 years of captivity. The Jews have been given the privilege and opportunity to go back home to Israel to rebuild the city of Jerusalem and to rebuild the temple. But here, there are certain Jews who have chosen to stay back in the land of their captivity. As you read the books of Ezra and Nehemiah, you learn that these Jews, and I want to be careful here, but I would reconcile the idea that they were comfortable enough with staying in their land of captivity that they had chosen not to return to the hard things of Jerusalem. And the reality is, in their comfort, in what they had become used to over 70 years, they are going to find themselves facing even some hard things in the land of what was their captivity and now their comfort. Now, we won't get into it this morning, but just understand, Mordecai And Esther and the Jews of this story have chosen to stay where God necessarily didn't want them. And so we are introduced to the ruling king in chapter 1 of the book of Esther. And I will tell you this, he is not anywhere in the realm of men that someone should strive to live after. One other thing that I will say by way of introduction is that for all of those who say God and politics should not mix, you are going to have a very hard time reading this part of God's story, not to mention God's use of Joshua before this, or Paul in the world after this. And so you find this man Mordecai in chapter 2 as a chief advisor to the king Ahasuerus. Ahasuerus is also tied to Esther simply because she becomes the queen, to put it nicely to this, to a very irresponsible and evil king. And so what I'm trying to paint a picture for you is that you and I can live in a very evil world and still live for the glory of God. You and I can live under very evil rulers and still live for the glory of God. And that's what we're going to see this morning. So I would encourage you to read books like Esther. I would encourage you to read books like Daniel. With our current climate culture, cultural climate in mind, and watch, how did God's children walk through hard times? What were choices they made during difficult situations? See, that is the idea that I hope we can grapple with over these next few weeks, even if we find ourselves standing face to face with a political ruler, or whether we find ourselves face-to-face with somebody in our family. Every single one of us is going to find ourselves having to decide, am I willing to do the hard thing? And if I am I strong enough to rise up to the task God has called me into? Now, I know it's probably a bit weird, but as we look at the book of Esther, I actually want to focus on Mordecai here. And it's really for one reason. Probably 0.1% of this world is going to be an Esther, so to speak. Esther gave us one of two of the greatest statements that I don't want us to forget this morning. But I believe Esther is Esther because God gave Esther a Mordecai. Now, I am going to tread very lightly here, and please understand my heart clearly on what I'm about to say. I am glad God put a Charlie Kirk in this world and in this country. I am also glad that in his tragic death, millions have risen up to a new level of desire to stand for what they believe. Over the last week, almost every single day, a new video came out with people chanting or declaring by video, "I am Charlie Kirk." Anybody see that? Mm-hmm. Now, I believe I have an understanding of the heart of what they mean. But I also believe this is a very dangerous sentiment to burn into the hearts of millions of people. See, Charlie Kirk was Charlie Kirk because God gave him a Frank Turek who could help him develop strong biblical arguments for the cultural moment we're living in. Charlie Kirk was a Charlie Kirk because God gave him a J.D. Vance and a Donald Trump who were people who could help move culture from the political realm. Charlie Kirk was a Charlie Kirk because God gave him a Victor Marx who could sit beside him on an airplane and mentor him through his journey. Charlie Kirk, from the testimony of those close to him, became a better Charlie Kirk because God gave him an Erica. And so what I want us to understand this morning from the book of Esther and this very difficult moment in Jewish history is that we do not need to be who God has made somebody else to be. We need to be who God has called us to be and be it with every fiber of our being. So everybody that we are connected to be connected to with can be who God has called them to be. So again, please don't miss the sentiment. I am thankful that the voice of God is rising up amongst our nation. But you and I don't have to be Charlie Kirk for our moment. We have to be us for our moment. Charlie Kirk's moment is past, and it is time for us now to speak the truth of God with grace and truth to our generation, to our time, to our family, to our city, to our politicians, so that they understand God did not die with Charlie Kirk. God is still alive on the throne, and his name will still be spread because I am not Charlie Kirk. I am a believer in Jesus Christ, who is raised up with a call to go into all the world and preach the gospel. I want you to be you for the glory of God and be you to the greatest you God can make you and develop you. And I want you to see why this is so important. Think about what Paul told the church of Ephesus in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 11. And God gave some apostles and some prophets and some evangelists and some pastors and teachers. He didn't say God made everyone a pastor. He did not say God made everyone a teacher. He did not say God made everyone apostle. He said some. So there's some that are going to preach the truth from the housetops. There are going to be some who teach the word of God in the background. There are going to be some who share their faith passionately in the street corners. But together we are the voice of God. Paul said this in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 and verse 4. Now there are a diversity of gifts, but the same Spirit. And there are differences of administration, but the same Lord. And there are diversities of operations, but it is the same God which worketh all in all. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man to profit with all. For to one is given by the Spirit the word of wisdom, to another the word of knowledge by the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the same Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another discerning of spirits, to another diverse kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. But all these worketh that one in the self same Spirit, dividing to every man severally as he will. For as the body is one and hath many members, and all members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ. I cannot be you, and you cannot be me, but together we can be the greatest representation of Christ this world needs to see if we simply commit to do hard things. Because like Esther, like Mordecai, like Charlie Kirk, we are empowered by God to accomplish the hard things we are going to face in this very evil world. And I want to challenge you with this. If you think September 2025 looks evil, you and I have not seen anything yet this world is going to experience. So you and I today need to decide, God, I want to walk through these hard things by your grace and with your mercy and with your truth and take a stand for your glory. I see one main characteristic in the life of Mordecai that helped him walk through hard things. As we look at that characteristic, I want to show you how it was used in hard times, and hopefully we can learn that God is able to empower us to walk through our hard times in a similar way. So the word I thought about through the story of Esther and the life of Mordecai is this: number one, resilience. Now, I have my own opinions on why the Jews had chosen to stay back in their land of captivity. However, without a doubt, none of them probably chose to stay under Persian rule with the idea that they're going to have to face a life-threatening situation. I don't believe that there was anyone who woke up that day when that decree was given by the Persian ruler for them to go back to Jerusalem, that they said, oh, you know what? I'm going to stay here in Persia so that one day I can be threatened with death and we'll just laugh through this situation. I don't think a single one of them thought about that at all. But think about this. How many of you have realized that we tend to move to what is easy? How many of you have acted like that in the past? I would think all of us have chosen at times, I'm going to do what's easy here. Years ago, I believe it was Staples who identified this truth by creating a button that could be pushed and we would move into the world of easy. How many of you remember that button? Mm-hmm. We like the easy button, don't we? The choices we make seem simple. The atmosphere and culture of easy is really what we like, but in reality, from the moment Adam and Eve were created, nothing has truly been easy. So there's an empowering that God provided so that as we face hard times, as we face hard things, we're able, through resilience, to come out successfully on the other side. Now, I don't want you to miss, I don't want you to miss it. I'm not saying that success means fame, fortune, and staying alive. I am saying, though, that you are able to stand under the pressure of the moment and successfully stand for the glory of God. So think about what this world, what this word resilience means. The American Psychological Association gives us a great working definition as they, define resilience as the process and outcome of successfully adapting to difficult or challenging life experiences, especially through mental, emotional, and behavioral flexibility and adjustment to external and internal demands. Now, here is the challenging thing about resilience. Resilience is built on the back of hard times. If you and I are always hitting the easy button, you and I have no need whatsoever for God to empower us with resilience. Yet let's just think about this idea of tapping the easy button for a moment and how this world is filled with some 8.2 billion people who are hitting the same button. For Mordecai, hundreds of thousands of other people around him were creating this situation that he found himself in, and it really didn't seem like God was activating Mordecai's easy button, does it? How many of you have ever felt that one? You're hitting that easy button and life is just getting harder and harder. In Esther chapter 2 and verse 6, we're told that Mordecai was taken captive from Jerusalem to Babylon. If the word-for-word idea is the case here, and I believe it is, Mordecai would easily be in his 80s at this time in God's story. Mordecai, we can say, had to walk through some hard things. He's still standing, though. He's still leading in people's lives. He's encouraging and equipping those around him for what we ultimately come down to is the glory of God. Now, you and I recognize as we read the book of Esther, God is not mentioned one time in this story. And yet you see God through it all if you look carefully. And so I want you to notice two main moments of resilience in his life that gives us two of the greatest thoughts, in my opinion, from the book of Esther. Would you notice with me in Esther chapter 2 that Mordecai was resilient in the face of despair, letter A. Esther chapter 2 verse 5 tells us, "Now in Shushan the palace, there was a certain Jew whose name was Mordecai, a son of Jer, the son of Shammai, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captivity, which had been carried away with Jeconiah, king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. And he brought up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother, and the maid was fair and beautiful, whom Mordecai, when her father and mother were dead, took her for his own daughter. Now, let us never forget that there were probably casualties when the nation of Babylon came in and raided Jerusalem and tried to take captive these individuals. We're not told exactly why Esther's mother and father were dead and why Mordecai was the best choice of relative for her to be taken care of. But you and I are told that Mordecai finds himself at a hard moment in his life, and God empowers him to take his cousin Esther and raise her up when she had lost absolutely everything in this world. Now, not to downplay Esther's pain, but understand this as well. Mordecai had lost family in this whole scenario as well. And so Mordecai, although filled with a different pain than Esther, would have to walk through this hard part of Esther's life right beside her with his own despair. You imagine walking into the midst of despair and having to answer difficult questions from a younger cousin who had really lost everything. No one wants to counsel a young girl on how to put one foot in front of the other when all she wants to do is lay in bed and forget that the world ever existed. And yet that is the world we live in today because of sin. God promised Adam the day that he ate the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, death would become a part of this world. And that is exactly what Mordecai and Esther were facing in this moment of despair as family members were ripped out of their lives. And now they are trying to make the best out of a desperate situation. And so you see some resilience to say, I am not going to give up on God in the midst of the despair. I am not going to shake my fist in the face of God in the midst of despair. I am not going to walk out on God's plan in the midst of despair. Mordecai said, I will raise up Esther as my own in the midst of despair. And we find great things happening because Mordecai was resilient in the middle of despair. Have you ever been in the midst of despair? I ask you the question, how did you respond to that moment of despair? Maybe this morning you're thinking to yourself, absolute failure. How many of you are thankful for God's grace that he didn't take you out of the world in the absolute failure of that moment? But I pray we would learn from the failure of that moment that we might become more resilient in the moment of despair that we will face yet again. So you see this resilience of Mordecai in the face of despair. Would you notice in our chapter as we come back to it that we find Mordecai resilient for the fortune of others? Letter B. Here in Esther chapter 4, Mordecai is faced with the news that his better enemy, Haman, has manipulated the king in such a way that he could create a decree that he would be able to kill off the Jewish race under the Persian rule. How many of you would say that hearing that there is a plot to kill you would create a hard or challenging life experience? Right? If you received a death threat, how many of you think that would be a hard experience to walk through? I would think all of us would agree. And so Mordecai, without a doubt, is thrust onto this mental and emotional roller coaster ride that only God could save him from by empowering him to walk through it. You and I are only going to get to the other side of hard times by walking right through the middle of them and conquering them through the power of God. So we notice that in the middle of the hard thing, Mordecai goes to the right person. At this moment, Esther had become queen and not really to this great king. And Mordecai believes that Esther would be able to get a meeting with him to express to him that there is an evil that is being allowed to fester under his rule that he should be aware of. I want you to know that resilience here, as Mordecai goes into fasting mode and clothes himself with sackcloth and ashes, Esther chapter 4, verse 4 tells us that she sent him word. And that word might have been, we don't know what the word is, but it might have been, "And Mordecai, you're acting like a nut, doing what the king absolutely despises. Take these clothes, put them on, change your attitude and appearance, because you know that the king despises this." Yet notice that the situation of the lives of the Jews was so hard in this moment that Mordecai essentially says, "This situation is too hard to accept your ease. We have to make the hard choice and go right to the heart of the situation so that we can see if God will accomplish something great for us and for his glory." So Esther is given word about Mordecai's response. And it's here that we read in chapter 4 that Esther finally makes the right decision and asks to find out, what is the problem going on with Mordecai? Now, you would think by the time they had lived together, she had seen the heart of Mordecai, she would have understand that something was kind of out of the normal with Mordecai here. But isn't it interesting how long we take sometimes to dig deeper into a hard situation to find out, why is this even happening? We're unwilling to ask the hard questions in a hard situation so that we can find out why it's even happening. What you and I often want to do is we want to hit that easy button. We want to throw lipstick on a pig and hope that it all goes away. How many of you understand that one, right? How many of you have realized in your life that lipstick looks good on a pig but for just but a moment? But the reality is, right there waiting for you is the mud pit that you tried to forget about and get out of. So Mordecai then challenges Esther to engage in the hardest moments of her life for the sake of every single individual she knows as a Jewish person under the rule of Persian law. And so here's what is exciting that I believe resilience does when it is lived out with success. It transfers. Esther had watched Mordecai do hard things. Esther had heard Mordecai teach her about working through hard things. And at this moment, when Esther was challenged with a hard thing, she could fall back on someone in her life who had also themselves walked through hard things and been successful. Now, don't miss here what that hard thing is for Esther. Esther didn't come with hard emotion. Notice Esther's response in verse 11 to Mordecai's challenge for her to speak to the king about this hard situation. Verse 11, "All the king's servants and all the people of the king's province do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, should come unto the king in the inner court who is not called, there is one law of him to be put to death." How many of you ever had somebody declaring to you that they're going through a hard situation, and you unwisely said, "Stop being so melodramatic," right? There wasn't anything melodramatic about what Esther was expressing to Mordecai. They had watched the queen previous be killed because she would not do exactly what the king said. And so Esther knew the reality of what she was about to walk into, and it was not melodramatic. It was a hard, difficult situation that she was going to walk through. Esther knew the consequences of her choices that she was weighing, and Mordecai's request with this evil king's emotion would be stirred up. And this is where the story gets so good for you and I. Notice the ending phrase of verse 14. "And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Mordecai says, you can hit that easy button right here. You can drive down Easy Street and not find any conflict in your life. But who's to say that God did not bring you into this world and put you in the middle of this evil culture and in the evil king's palace for the very moment and time we are living? Understand something. Moses was born for a moment. William Tyndale, a Bible translator who was killed for translating the Bible, was born for a moment. Charlie Kirk was born for a moment. These are all just moments in God's story. Mordecai was reminding Esther that God created her for a moment that would carry on the promise of God for all eternity. See, all too often we think about moments for the moment because we are incapable of seeing God's big picture. Yet if we can learn resilience in the middle of a hard moment, we might just get to be a part of something bigger than ourselves. The Jewish nation still had a possibility, or the Jewish nation still has a possibility of redemption, because a Jew had a possibility of being born in a perfect place at the perfect time based on a perfect promise. See, God had promised to Adam and Eve that he would send a redeemer who would bruise the head of, who would crush the head of the serpent and bruise the heel. And that is only going to happen if it comes through the line of Abraham, who was being threatened to be wiped out. And so God was using a maiden for a moment so the message could carry on. God was using a person for his plan so his promise could be fulfilled. Satan's plan has always been about wiping the Jews off the face of the earth, because if he succeeds, he breaks God's promise and God's perfection fails. I want you to understand that God is going to consistently rise up people because God will not allow his perfection to fail. So you and I are here today as a part of God's plan to see his perfection come to completion. God is not so little that he cannot see Satan's tactics and Satan's influence and put an unknown Jewish girl in the palace of an evil king who had learned to live a resilient life from her cousin who took her in during a hard time in both of her lives. So I want you to think about this. When's the last time you faced a hard thing and you said, for such a time as this, I will stand for God's glory? Esther had to move for her safety, or from her safety to God's sovereignty. She had to move from the idea that she could live in the lavishness of the palace to the idea that God was in control of all this situation. So notice what happens, because Mordecai challenges Esther to be resilient in the face of a hard decision. Esther sends word to Mordecai, verse 16. And if I perish, I perish. Would you say those six words with me? And if I perish, I perish. I wonder when's the last time you lived with that emphasis on your life. How often in American society do we say, I will not hand out a gospel tract because somebody might laugh at me? What an absolute ridiculous statement in our world that we live in, that we are more concerned with people laughing at us than us living for the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. When is the last time we have said, if I perish, I perish? When is the last time your life got so on fire for God that you said, it doesn't matter if I die, I'm going forward because I've heard this is what God's called me to do? I was having this conversation with Aaron yesterday. All kinds of craziness happening down around the arena where the memorial for Charlie Kirk's going to go. I guess it was actually, it was yesterday. He said, "Do you think I'm crazy for going down to a place that they could bomb?" And I said this, "Why are you going? If you and I know the why, it does not matter the what. But it is high time that the church stops placating to the world and worrying about if we're going to get laughed at and start to stand with this idea, I know my why, therefore it doesn't matter the what. It doesn't matter if I die because God will be glorified in my death if I have lived for him as I've walked through this world. But I want you to understand that there are going to be a lot of Christians in heaven with their heads bowed in utter disgrace because they were more worried about living for the world than they are for the Word of God. Again, please understand me. I am grateful for everybody who has risen up because of Charlie Kirk. But please understand me again. You and I will never love our husbands and wives like we ought to love our husbands and wives. You and I will never train our children in the way that they should go. You and I will never share our gospel long term because of Charlie Kirk. It's only going to be because of our relationship with Jesus Christ, where we, like Esther, say, if I perish, I perish. I wonder this morning, how different would America look today if we would have had two or three generations that would have lived with this mindset? If I perish, I perish. I'm going to try and be as kind as possible here. But I grew up in a generation that was more worried about power and control in the church than it was about the lost outside its four walls. I've been blown away as a pastor who even just recently was faced with ridicule from someone else asking a man to pray in church when a Christian was adamantly opposed to praying in church. Friends, this morning we are failing our city here in Lake Havasu City if, as Christians, we are unwilling to publicly pray together for God to move amongst us where there is no fear of perishing by another believer in this room. How is it that we are going to be resilient in a hard world when we are unwilling to do the simplest Christian act within the safety and security of people who love us? You and I have to challenge our city and the church around us that we are no longer going to be comfortable as Christians to go to these big churches that allow us to walk in at the last moment, never say a single word to anybody, walk out before we can be talked to anybody, never talk to anybody about the gospel all week long, come back to that same church week in and week out, month in and month out, year in and year out, and stand before God and say, I've loved you with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength. That is a lie from the pit of hell, and there are a lot of Christians in this world who have lived that mindset out for generations, and it's time to stop. Our homes are broken. Our work culture is destroyed. We have Christians cussing like drunken sailors. We have Christians drunk like alcoholics, and we're trying to tell the world, come to Jesus. It's never going to happen until we get back to this idea, if I die, I die. I was just noticing the other day, again, you see all this news going on with Charlie Kirk, a young guy introduced himself. He was Charlie Kirk was mentoring him, and he showed this video of him speaking on the streets in South Carolina, I believe it was. His name is Brillin Hollihand. He made a statement that broke my heart because I'm a part of the generations that he's talked about. Just the other day, he made a statement that he said to the older generations that were there, you've been willing to vote at the ballot box, but unwilling to speak in the public square. And then he said this, don't worry, Generation Z will be doing it today. I wonder how many of us are going to stand before the Lord and say, don't worry, Generation Z did it for us. Mm-hmm. Generation Z should only be doing it for us because we did it for them. Generation Z should be the greatest cultural of Christians because the millennials and the Gen Xers and the boomers were more worried about the gospel than they were about their pocketbook. They were more worried about salvation than stocks. They were more worried about people's eternal value than they were about the politics that were ruling their country. Now, please understand me. Money's important. Homes are important. Politics are important. But nothing pales in comparison to the lost world around us. We had hard times like World War II and Vietnam, and those were hard times in America. And it was from those moments that I believe we can really see the importance of this quote that's been spoken many times. Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. I believe you and I are in hard times in America because we are filled to capacity with weak men. It does not take a strong man to pull a trigger and kill somebody. It does not take a strong woman to go on the internet and gossip all over the place about what's going on. It takes strong men to control the anger that is welling up with them because they are so burdened for the gospel around the nation. They are so burdened for the loss that are placed over them in political realms. It takes strong women to help their husbands fulfill the mission that God has called them to. It takes strong women to work amongst a culture that is telling them the only thing that is important is beauty. It takes strong women to do hard things. And you and I need some strong women and some strong men in Lake Havasu to stop allowing bars to be built and see some churches raise up for the good news of the gospel. You and I need to see some strong men and some strong women influence homes so we stop seeing divorces, but we see dedicated couples to glorify the God as they move forward. You and I live probably even better than Mordecai and Esther in many years of good times. Those good times have created many, many, many weak men and women. And I would say without a doubt, you and I are at a crossroads of hard times, just like Mordecai and Esther. Resilience rose to the top and saw God glorified as Esther stood before the king. Mordecai and Esther stood on a stage for God's glory. So here's what I want us to see this morning as we draw to a close. God rose up Mordecai, who could influence and help Esther. Esther, with much more influence and power to persuade a king than the average person, still needed the general population to stand with her. I would love to watch a Mordecai rise up out of this room. I would love to watch an Esther stand with resilience and say, if I die, I die. But please understand me, I would be just as excited if God wrote our story here at this church only with the words of verse 16. Go gather together all the Jews that are present at Shushan and fast ye for me, and neither ye eat nor drink 3 days and nights. There's a large population of people who are simply called the Jews at Shushan. Please understand me this morning. I do not care for a single moment if anybody remembers the name of Rob Westlake. But I will tell you this. I do want people to remember, as a Christian and a Christ follower, that there was someone who was resilient in the face of hard things and stood according to the word of God in the face of that hard thing. If all they remember is some crazy Canadian who did hard things for God's glory, that's good enough for me. I am not Charlie Kirk. You are not Charlie Kirk. you and I don't have to be disappointed about not being him, because God created us for such a time as this. Let me say this as well. Just because you don't have a voice with the king like Esther does not mean you don't have to rise up to the highest levels God created you to be. D.L. Moody, a great preacher and evangelist in Chicago, made this statement about Henry Valerie made that changed his life forever when he was visiting England. Moody said, while at this Moody meeting in England, Valerie said to him, "Moody, the world has yet to see what God will do with a man fully consecrated to him." Moody certainly did some great things for God, but Moody was created for 1800s Chicago. We stand here in 2025, and I wonder who will be the Mordecai of today. Who will be the Esther? Who will be the Jew in Shushan that is talked about in generations to come, if God should so tarry? We will never be resilient in the face of hard things tomorrow if we say today, "Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die." This world is so much more than the pleasures we find in it. And so I encourage you, take some time to dig deep into this story of Esther and watch God, way back in the background of these pages, rise up a people who do something hard for the glory of God. For such a time as this, Mordecai said, I have concluded that if God has called me into this time and I die for his glory, Esther said. You and I have a time. You and I are going to die. I pray we would stand before God, not head bowed in despair because we live for ourselves, but knee bowed with a crown full of jewels to place at the feet of Jesus Christ because we were fully committed to him. Maybe you're here this morning and you say, "You know what? For the last 30, 40 years, I've lived on easy street." I would encourage you to give that over to the Lord. I would encourage you to stop hitting the easy button and ask God to help you. "God, how do I rise up in this moment?" Maybe you're going to say, "I'm older. I'm widowed. My health is not that great. What can I do to finish well? What can I do to take the last moments I have?" Maybe you're here this morning and you're younger and you're battling some hard times and you've been hitting that easy button and you've been hitting that easy button and God doesn't seem to be helping you in the easy button. I wonder this morning if you say, "God, instead of the easy button today, I'm going to ask you for some resilience so that I can walk headlong through this and see what you want to do for your glory." I promise you, Lake Havasu City needs to see a church rise up for his glory, where both young and old are living a resilient faith for God's glory. The decision we have to make is, do I want to be a part of it? And if we want to be a part of it, I promise you this, God will give you the power to be and do exactly what God wants you to be and do. Would you pray with me?